throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call time.
Hi there.
How's it going?
It's good. Went to a bat mitzvah last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
How? Really?
Yeah.
How did you get an invitation to a bat mitzvah?
I wasn't invited.
But you just showed
free
up?
Free food, yeah.
Huh.
Sliders, fries, and sushi, and...
Really?
I don't even drink, but I had like 6 vodka bottles of vodka. Like I said, I don't...
Yeah, clearly yeah. You have no idea what alcohol is.
Nope.
Nope. Oh. Mm. Well, we're not...
Had some turpentine. Okay, moving on.
Well, we have a special guest today.
Hello.
Lovely voice, by the way. You have a voice for radio.
Really? I don't. Yeah. I guess I have a face for it too, because I'm really ugly.
No. Don't say that. Don't sell yourself short. Matthew Vitale.
Yeah.
Is that right? I pronounced that correct.
Correct.
Okay. He was actually one of our first listeners that called in to the podcast and asked questions.
Yeah. So if you call us.
We can have
then we'll have
show.
You come over to our show, and if you want, you can have a free cup of coffee from our Keurig machine.
Oh yeah,
that you declined.
So like
that's fine.
Someone can have 2 cups of coffee.
I'll take that cup.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, there's incentive.
Mm-hmm. Huge incentive
to interact. You get to come to Tarzan.
I feel like I should have prepped this, but we already. If you listen to a past podcast, you can listen to Matthew over the telephone asking questions about film school and why. Why he couldn't get work in San Francisco, which kind of sucks. but you're now in Ventura.
Yes.
And you're going to film school.
Yeah, I'm going to Brooks Institute of Photography technically, but we just call it Brooks Institute. And I'm a film student up there, and it's pretty crazy. It's like I'm here now. It's kind of like how my brain works. I'm like, oh, like you never really think, oh, I'm gonna be in the center of like where film is, even though I'm on the far outskirts of like where the industry is. But like I've just been like getting gigs on like bigger sets. Like I was on set these past few days, and that was the first time I'd ever worked with a 5-ton before. Like we only worked with like half tons before in the Bay Area.
Can you explain what a half ton and a full? Because I don't even know.
Sure. Yeah, grip truck.
Oh, okay.
So like I'd only worked like half tons are basically like it's like that's how much. The weight of the gear in the truck is essentially, and then it's like a sprinter van full of just grip gear, and then 5-ton is like a big, you know, box truck, like 5 tons of gear, and like, you know, carts coming in and out and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and it was crazy.
Yeah. So, how did you get that opportunity? I mean,
I got it through my film department head, Nana Grenwald. She basically had a former student who was the production manager and needed some PAs, and she was like, hey. You and your roommate, you know, my roommate Jake, he's like, hey, you guys are our most experienced, like, shooters in, you know, your current, like, freshman class. You guys should really get on this. So, you know, she made an announcement to the class, like, hey, if you guys want to go PA, this is really cool. It'd be a great opportunity. And so, you know, I took her up on it and got on set, and it was crazy. It was, like, huge stuff. First time I'd ever, like, touched an RE before. And I was like, oh. I was like, oh.
That's exciting. Hey. Well, and it's funny because you were just saying that you just started going to school there.
Yeah, too. I started in September.
Wow.
That was the same, like when I went to Montana State, it was the same thing. It was like October, and they're like, we need some PAs for a movie. And yeah, like take those opportunities every chance you get because it's awesome and there's food.
And you already got to work with Jack McGee.
Yeah, I got to meet Jack McGee. Got to have talent. Got to have him take a C-47 off the back of my hat and clip it on my nipple. It was crazy. I got to experience having to take a crew member to the hospital or have to hospitalize a crew member.
Wow.
He got a spider bite that got super infected super quickly. And he started he's like sitting on the bench just like, oh no, I'm fine guys. He's like slowly keeling over. And I was just like... No.
We got to take you in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. With the film school, do you have a specialty? Do you specialize in anything?
Yeah, you specialize through your electives. And so, you know, if you want to be an editor, we've got our, you know, editing courses, our advanced editing. If you want to do CGI, we've got our CGI courses, and we've got like Maya and stuff like that. If you want to, you know, be a cinematographer, we've got cinematography and lighting theory and all that cool stuff. All the film students take production workshops where you basically, you continuously get on set and you work on your own productions and you write and you direct and you know, you grip, you gaff, you do whatever, you know, you want to do. And, you know, then for like the upper division students, they pull on the lower division students to work on the upper division projects. Like we've got the production workshop 289, which is the advanced workshop. They're pulling on students from the lower division 109 workshop to work on theirs.
That's cool. So, and it's just, do you guys have studios there too where you can like build sets? And
yeah, we
like
have three sound stages.
Wow.
It's a former motion picture campus.
Oh, that's crazy.
They shot Aaron Brockovich there.
Oh, really?
Cool.
That is really cool.
I've seen that movie.
You like that movie?
I love that movie.
I think you own that movie.
I do. I used to own it on VHS, and then I picked it up on DVD. Matthew, when I made the transition.
Do you know what a VCR is?
Yeah, I don't know what VCR is. I also know what records are.
Oh, sweet. Oh, man. Good.
8-track?
I barely know what an 8-track is.
I'm not sure. It looks like a cart from radio.
Yeah, very much so. And I think it goes through and then it rewinds itself.
Does it? I don't know.
Yeah, and you can fast forward to the songs you like. And then when it's done, you can...
I wasn't in the 70s, so I don't know what...
I was conceived in the 70s. Born in the 80s.
Congratulations. Wow. Yeah. You spent 2 decades.
Mm-hmm. 96.
All right.
Jeez. I was 16 when you were born.
Yeah, I got my driver's license that year.
Oh my gosh.
You were probably freaking out on the day I was born. I was born Friday the 13th.
Probably.
Nice. Oh,
that's cool. I do love your movies.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Those are actually a historical documentary about my family.
Oh, I'm
much
sorry.
Much like The Matrix. That's a documentary about the cult that I'm from.
Oh. Oh, hey.
Thanks for coming. Time to wrap it up.
All right. Fine. Staked out back.
Do you... I like this guy. What kind of things do you want to do?
I'm still kind of figuring that out. I've had a lot of fun in camera department back up in the Bay Area. I worked with like a C500 on a daily basis with the amazing colorblind cinematographer that is Kevin Lee Loader, if he's listening right now.
colorblind? Wow.
Yeah, really? He's a cool guy. He's amazing. Like, I mean, he was basically my mentor up in the Bay Area because I had a year-long, eight months because I had to come down here, internship up there with a production company. And that was just like amazing. I learned a lot about, you know, working in the field, and he really got me off on a really amazing foot.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now you're going straight into film school. Did you do any undergrad, or is that, or you just went from high school?
Just went straight from high school, working in like public access and in theater, you know, kind of like scrape up cash.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hey, I think I'm about film school because I can't really, don't have the grades to go much places else. And, my dad's like,
welcome to the industry.
Yeah.
It was pretty, and the school, Brooks Institute is pretty popular with military vests, stuff like that. And I'd heard about Brooks from like a couple of photographer friends and an ex-girlfriend who was interested in the school. And I got a flyer from them in the mail, and it was like really clever. It was like a bunch of student work, like in like a bunch of different squares. And it said Matthew Vitale, class of like 18 or whatever. And it was a blank square and it said your work here. And I was like,
nice.
I was like, that's clever.
That was clever.
I'll give him a call. And like, it was like a phone interview process. And like, They're like, oh yeah, we'll come on down for open house. And so my dad was like, hey, I'll come down with you. So we basically flew down, went to Burbank, and then we drove up because he was like, I have work and I want to drive. We drove up there and we saw the campus, and like I was like super sketchy. He's like, I'm like, you know, what dad wants their, you know, he's like a business dude, and he's like, what, you know, business dude wants their son to go into like an art school? And then like after the, you know, the whole tour, I was like, well, what did you think? He's like, I really like it. Like, I like their teaching style, I like everything about it. And I was like, really? Because I was more sketched out than him, I thought. Like, I was So it was crazy. Like, yeah.
Is it a 4-year program or 3, or how does it
it's
play out?
Like 2 2/3 of a year, because they basically, it's not a mandatory summer semester, but it's a highly recommended you go through their summer semesters.
Okay.
Because that way they basically want you to get into the industry as fast as possible. So
that's nice.
They'll recommend you do the summer classes, and you get a 4-year BFA. With a minor in business and communication, because you have to take mandatory film business and ethics class. And
that's
law
super
classes.
Smart.
Yeah, like they talk about like, you know, having rates and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and, like, you know, contracts and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh, that's boring. But you have no idea how valuable it becomes when you're actually looking for work. And
yeah.
like, I have no idea what I should set my rate at, but like
that's a common thing.
An hour, I guess.
Yeah, and just go from there.
I just say, just give me like a pizza, and I'll call it a day, or like a.
See, don't sell yourself short.
Yeah,
I think that's the most common question I get from young editors is you know, what should my rate be?
And, but that's when you're doing like freelance,
yeah, I mean, non-union. Yeah. I mean, the thing is with union stuff, there's a set rate, like you get scale. And it might depending on the budget of the picture or TV show.
Yeah,
it goes from there. But if you're non-union, like sky's the limit, I guess.
And when you're like my age, I think the issue I'm having right now is like finding people who are willing to pay me in the first place. Because it seems like a lot of people like think that if you're like under the age of about like 25, you are like not, you don't need to be paid. Like you're like, oh no, man, it's the opportunity. And I kind of want to, I kind of grab my ears and like, look, dude. Oh, sorry about that. Oh, I'm an asshole.
No, you're fine.
I kind of grab him by the ears and go like, look, dude, I'm giving you my time. Like, I'm giving you like a 15, 16 hour day. You need to compensate me in some way. Like my time is like not something, you know, like I have limited time on this earth. You need to compensate me for the time I am giving you.
Like, I like that. That's good. I mean, that's good. Especially the sooner you can do that, the better, I think.
Yeah. And that was something that I actually learned from shooting with a band up in San Francisco called Low Country Kingdom. That I met them on Reddit, and they're like, I was shooting for them, like, just, like, documentary, kind of running gun style. Like, they were like, hey, dude, we want to start paying you. I'm like, oh, no, you don't have to. Like, no, dude, your time is worth money. You need to start realizing that. I'm like,
yeah.
And I feel like that's also something that a lot of young film industry workers don't realize, that their time is worth something.
Right.
And the problem is getting, like, the money people, the producers, as my, like, you know, like, my film history teacher says, like, the money people, they never realize that people need to be paid, basically, when it comes to younger people.
It's funny because the first movie I ever worked on, something called Jekyll down here.
Your first picture.
My first picture in the industry. It was a talkie.
With a
young Clark Gable. It was my buddy Dave, who I met in film school, was doing swing, grip, and electric work, and he was like, you know, come to set and like check it out. So I skipped my first ever college class in California to go check out the set. Got an A in the class, by the way. No big deal.
That's
don't
true.
Remember what the class was called. I didn't learn anything, but nailed it. And I hung out for like 3 days, and eventually his supervisor was like, here, fill out this paperwork, and then they'll start paying you. No one like interviewed me. No, I just showed up. I'm not saying this is how it works. I just know that I knew someone, and I just went. And it wasn't like a huge, it wasn't like a big budget, you know. This wasn't like Jon Favreau directing something for Marvel or anything like that. This was just like a $500,000 movie. And eventually they were like, here, have like, I got like $136 or something for like a week of work.
Right.
Which is nothing, but.
Nope.
Sure. Did you get paid when you were at Miramax? Is your internship?
$10 a day.
Oh, really?
Boom.
For lunch?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I got. But I had college credit for it,
right? Like, because I didn't get paid at ULA,
which I don't know,
but I don't care because it's what led me to where I am. So it's like an interesting like conversation that people have about, because now it's been a big deal about like unpaid internships and stuff like that. And
that's what my internship up in the Bay Area was, really unpaid, but he got me a one paid gig, which I totally appreciate him for, because it was with Spike.
Oh, so very cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there should be, I mean, in my opinion, if you're an intern, 3 to 6 months, I think that's a good time to be not paid, but you get the experience and you get college credit for.
Yeah.
Anything longer than that is like, okay, well, you're an employee because you're doing stuff that we should be paying someone to do.
Well, and I get there's the difference between like stuff that has to be done where we have to pay you for it and stuff that an intern does, which is like extra.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think a lot of internships are just like, show up and just read these scripts. And it's like, if they didn't read them, someone else would, or just no one would, because that's what happens to most scripts.
Right, right.
But I don't know. It's an interesting...
Yeah.
It's kind of shifting, I think.
Well, how was your internship?
My internship had me starting out as, like, a PA, basically, like, doing PA work on set all the time. Like, I think my first gig was I was shooting a commercial for Dell Computers, like, up in the Bay Area. You know,
dude.
Their campus is pretty rad.
You're getting a Dell.
It's funny because the office we're shooting, I was right across from my dad's office. So, like, he didn't know I was shooting there, so I took a picture of his office and sent to him, like, I'm in your hood.
Creepy. Yeah. He responds back.
And he's, and he,
who is this?
She promptly responded with, get back home. But no, and then I ended up basically working my way up to first ACing and key gripping for some of our production. So we're doing a lot of commercial work, and I did some AD work for them on days when stuff got a little tight, and then I did a little bit of acting for them. It was just like I was
a little bit of everything.
Right, a little bit of everything, but long days. And I know he's probably listening to this, but it was days that I honestly probably I don't regret being there because even though I wasn't being paid, like the experience of like a 19-hour day or like a 20-hour day was just like so valuable because like it was just like you know those long hours and like. You know, it's hard work and, you know, it sucks and everyone starts hating each other and they get a little pissy with each other. But at the end of the day, like, you finished it. Like,
right.
That's something that, like, whenever I would try to do something on my own, like, in the Bay Area, there's, like, a huge thing. It's like, if you're not doing the next biggest thing, no one wants to be a part of it. Like, people will just bail out on me. And the fact that I was up there finishing something and, like, getting people, like, being around people who just wanted to be there was just so valuable compared to, like, you know, sitting on my ass and reading Reddit about, oh, what should you do on set?
That's how you found us, by the way.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I found the Early Call Time podcast through like a thread that was like, oh, like what are some cool film podcasts to listen to? And it got brought up. I think maybe one of you probably posted it or
no, definitely not. It's not. I was us. A fan. It's
possible totally. Not
us. Definitely. I've never even heard of that obscure website.
Reddit.
I don't follow.
Yeah, just listened and I called and I'm like, why isn't there anything in the Bay Area?
And then you're here.
To film school? And then I'm here. It's crazy. Like,
I think our advice is go get a job at ILM.
Yep.
Pixar. Just call. Here's George Lucas's personal email.
Yep.
Shoot him a message. He will bring you on board.
Yeah, that's how we got jobs.
Yep.
No, I'm lying.
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. That guy.
So you're kind of feeling out what you want to do. I know that you're early on in this whole process, but I assume you plan to kind of move a little bit closer to LA proper once you're done?
Once I'm out of school, I'm basically just living in Ventura with my girlfriend right now. She's a graphic designer, so she can just work wherever she wants, honestly.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah, that's not an issue for her. We kind of plan to move closer to LA. And Ventura is like, it's super nice. I mean, like, for those of you that know the Bay Area, like Santa Cruz, it's like Santa Cruz like took a shower and got a day job, basically. Like,
that's awesome.
I broke JJ.
Oh boy, I'm glad I wasn't drinking coffee because it would have went out my nose.
I would have been a little jealous if someone else got you to do a spit take. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
Wow, it's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's really true. I mean, like, I'm from like San Jose, which is like, you know, it's like the tech wasteland of the Silicon Valley. It's like there's like big office buildings and like some homeless dude shitting himself on the street, like
in front of the Winchester Mansion.
Basically, actually, if there weren't so many cops over there, actually, it probably would happen. But it's like it's crazy. Like there's like, you know, big tech buildings and then like people who don't have homes. Like,
yeah,
it's like this. And there's like just like. You know, the gentrification and, like, the I can talk about that all day, but, like, you know, like, the weird way the Silicon Valley works is so much crazier compared to here, where it's, like, here, like, the way neighborhoods, like, look and feel kind of blend in, like, a more organic way than, like, the Bay Area is very hot or cold. Like, it's either, like, it's a good neighborhood or you're about to get shanked if you don't hurry about along now. Like,
I've read that about that. There was an article that came out not long ago about Silicon Valley and being, like, here are the people that you don't read about who live in the Silicon Valley who are not the, you know, gazillionaires. And they're just like, you know, they have nothing.
The industry up there is pretty tight, too. You got, like, a couple of major production houses. You got, like, Little Giant Lighting Grip, Rebel Sun, who I've worked with, like, once. And, like, you know, there's, like, a couple other rental houses that also have crews built into them than PA-less, and that's about it. Like,
it's too bad that San Francisco is so expensive because, like,
it's a beautiful
it would
city.
Be if I could, like, work there full-time, I would absolutely go up there.
If I could afford to live there, I would definitely have stayed up there. But the way things are going right now, like, if I want to work and live a comfortable life, I had to get out of there.
That's one lesson I think people have to learn is you got to come to LA.
Yeah.
New York is sort of similar, but I think it's harder to get started in New York than it is out here. Yeah. From what I've heard.
From what I've heard, you have to do a lot of day play work in New York. You just got to go out and find the sets and like say, hey, where's your key PA? Can I go work in your lockup? Like, or something like that.
Yeah. And there's still more happening out here despite tax credits and all that.
Well, I know that was the best key of advice that I received was you need to move out here.
Like,
no one's going to hire you from the Midwest. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure that that has happened, but it's very rare.
It's nice for you because it's a 5-hour drive essentially from home. So it's not like you have to fly across the country.
No, and I've got a trusty little 96 Honda Civic that gets 40 to the gallon. Like I can just cruise on up there, like on about like a full tank of gas and like,
I'm going to tell you right now that your hubcaps are gone if you parked it on the street here.
Yeah, I did. I noticed something. I was like, there's a lot of, what do you say? How do you call it?
Mexico.
Mercedes.
I was going to say a lot of furniture on the street. Oh. Like, I was like, there's like, I saw like three like mattresses and like a couch. I'm like, why aren't these gone yet? Like,
funny story.
All the time.
Andrew has a running bet with his girlfriend that if the alley is actually clean of furniture, that he's going to give her $1,000.
Yeah, and I'm keeping my $1,000. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to go out there and clean it all up herself, and I wouldn't either. Not even for a grand, I don't think.
I don't know, man.
Maybe. I might.
But where would you put it?
Just one block over.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it
today. I said this alley. I didn't say all alleys. Mm-hmm. So, have you done any of the work on, like, upper-level films? Like, the upperclassmen or whatever they call them?
That starts either next week or the week after. I'm going to have to double-check with that. And we're doing a set build, 3-day set build, because it's all on our soundstage. It's called Trans Rock. It's like a, it's like basically all like takes place backstage at a rock concert. So it's it's all like overhead rigging and like stuff like that. So I've, you know,
that's awesome.
What people who are grips are getting like cleared, especially from our equipment cage for all that kind of stuff. We got a huge equipment cage.
Yeah.
And it's like basically like, you know, we're being brought on, the key grip will show us what we need to do. And then we like build the set. We're going to set up all the grid. We're going to light the grid and it's basically kind of back to theater basics with that kind of a lighting setup.
Yeah, that's true.
Super familiar, but it's just like, you know, it's still kind of different because, like, we'll not really be needed too much on set, but, like, we'll still be needed on set. So it's, it's probably a little more chill, a little bit more of a chill, like, shoot from, like, kind of like the grip side of things. Because that's basically what I do for, like, kind of like the money right now.
Yeah.
Even though I don't get paid that much or at all, usually. but, like, you know, from the grip side of things, it's going to be pretty chill. And I got kind of told, like, the DP was kind of there. I was like, hey, if you need, like, an extra hand with camera or, like, a camera PA when things get kind of chill, like, just kind of grab me and I know what to do.
Yeah. And those are all students?
All students.
Cool.
All student-funded, all, like, student-designed, written, directed, all that stuff.
I know when I did that in school, it was nice because it's sort of like, it's an easier transition from going to, like, you know, like, I mean, you've done it. You went on to, like, a big set.
Yeah.
It was nice for us because we could sort of ease in. So it's like the people who are ahead of you in school by a couple of years, and they're still, like, kind of figuring it out. But it's not like, you know, where you're working on some $100 million thing where there's all this, there's still pressure, but it's like the same amount. So it's kind of cool to see where they're at in their learning process. Cause then when you get to that point in a couple of years, you're going to be like, oh, I remember this trick that they used, or here's what they messed up on. So I'm not going to, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's a lot to
talking about. It's not even work in this industry.
You're just here for the free coffee.
I don't even live here. I crashed this podcast. I work in an Olive Garden.
Along with the bar mitzvah.
As a dishwasher. Yeah, and a bar mitzvah. You said your faculty has some impressive credits as well. What's their story?
A lot of them are award-winning. A lot of them have, like, Emmys and stuff like that. I don't know the specifics. I'd have to go back and look. But Nana Grenwald, I keep bringing her up. She's going on the film department chairs. And I think she's also the head of the department. I can never remember. Because it's, like, everyone there kind of, like, runs their own little individual thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Nana was one of the producers on Seven. I could look up her IMDb right now. But she's been she's mainly a producer. She's part of the PGA. We've got Tracy and Judy Trotter, both of them, like, you know, husband wife team, like, working, and like Judy's our direct connection to the Santa Barbara International Film Festival.
That's huge.
That's real huge.
So, and Brooks has a huge tradition of getting into the student student side of things there.
Yeah,
and cool. Like winning the students 10-10-10 usually. Wow, I'm dying here.
It's okay.
It happens.
It happens.
A lot of people.
You can grab
died
your canteen. It's totally yeah. okay.
I'll do that real quick.
Yeah.
Be the fourth guest that has died on this couch today.
Yeah, fourth.
Nice.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's okay. You know?
Oh, man.
It's the circle of life.
You okay?
That smells a lot like gin. I don't know.
How do you know what gin smells like?
I thought you didn't drink.
I didn't drink. I smell. I like to go into liquor stores and just smell all the liquor.
Can I smell that?
I'd like to sniff that bottle.
And he gets a ladder and he goes to the top and he's like, here you go. This is the best whatever.
And I smell it and I go, thank you. Have a nice day.
Is that usually like dispensaries that you do that at? Just go and like
probably.
Smell. Oh yeah, that's
that I drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
It's weird. He's
I got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Digestive issues.
Yeah, that's cool though that people are actually like
professionals in.
I think colleges. Some film schools, it's like, well, I was the key PA on one season of Family Matters, and now I'm teaching. I don't know. Not that that's bad.
Yeah,
but it's not like we had a guest, a guy named what was his name, John Badham, director of Saturday Night Fever.
Big plug.
Yeah.
Episode 50 and 51.
And 51, yeah.
Plugging that one right in there.
Yeah.
He teaches at a school.
Chapman,
in Orange County. So it's like, there are a lot of people I think now that are doing part of that. One of our writers on our show teaches at USC a screenwriting class, so it's cool to talk to people who are actually doing it for a living.
Instead of teaching, we're doing this.
Yeah.
We're giving back in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Some could say this is more valuable than a film school class.
See, Matthew, we should quote you. Put that on the website.
Put that on a shirt.
And then all the film schools are listening to this, and they're like, these guys don't know what they're talking about.
Dude, film schools have a weird dynamic when you're a film student in another film school. It's like you're kind of like staring at each other awkwardly from like across.
Like there's a rivalry or something?
Kind of, yeah.
We kind of had that with Ball State and IU. Like, well, those guys are taking your jobs. That kind of
really,
yeah. It was very weird.
Really weird, yeah. On the set I was working at this weekend, there was the second AD was a USC graduate. The production manager was a Brooks alumni, you know, Brooks graduate, and the first AD was a Chapman grad. And then there's a bunch of other Brooks grads on the grip team, and it was really weird because, like, you know, we're all really friendly to each other, and like I've got a really good relationship with a lot of people at Chapman. I'm actually going to DP one of their water polo team's like music videos coming up really soon.
Oh, that's
the most random like series of things to combine into one sentence.
Well, one of my friends is on the water polo team in their producing program, which is how I got that.
Okay.
I met her through my internship.
Wait, water polo like the sport?
Yeah,
cool.
Their team does like a music video every year for some reason.
Like, all right,
this random thing.
Oh, like, Orange County, you guys are so white.
Oh, it's true.
But that's cool. That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's like it's like weird series of events, and like you know, and it's also kind of like a competition in terms of like who's got the best equipment cages, like who has got the best rental.
That is so huge when you're in film school.
Oh yeah,
how many of this do you have?
Yeah.
16 of them.
I don't know how to use them, but. Cool.
We got them.
Yeah.
Well, I know that was a big thing. Like, you get to film school and you see all the equipment that you've, like, heard about, and you go,
and everyone's like, do you have a red? And I'm just like,
man, a red wasn't even a thing when I was in school.
And all the editors are like, oh, God, the red's color picture, like, color profile. It's just like, it's like you want to throw up when you see it.
Yeah. Wow. That's it. Yeah, that's interesting. Because I know in school, they would say, oh, we have these, I think the GL1.
Yeah,
and the PD-150 were coming out, and
we had the Canon
that could
XL1.
Shoot anamorphic, and that was a big deal.
Anahuatic?
Anamorphic.
Uh-huh.
And it was. I feel like I was more on the cutting edge when I was in college, and then when I got out of school, realized that in the working profession with corporate video, they don't use that equipment. They use even more outdated equipment because of budgets and stuff.
Yeah.
So, do you? I mean, you've kind of seen both. Do you see that kind of paradigm or no?
Kind of. Like, it depends on, like, the kind of crew you're working with, too, like, obviously. But, like, at Brooks, we're a little bit under-equipped because our last owner kind of, like, fucked us over pretty hard.
Oh.
But now we're actually refreshing the cage. We're getting a lot more equipment in.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, the awesome part is the free checkout because you get. I was never comfortable with like the 5D Mark IIIs and stuff like that because I was like, oh, these are. I have a 60D, and I was like, oh man, those are like way ahead of my league. And then I was like, you know what? I'm heading out to Victorville to go to like scout out an Air Force base for a couple of days. Let's just grab that and that and that from checkout and then drive out there. Yeah. And by the time I was like, you know, I drove out there for a day, shot and came back, and like I felt super comfortable with the camera after, and it was all free, and like I made.
Yeah.
I was able to check out like L series lenses and like basically anything I needed, and like I was checking out like more than probably like with what I've checked out, I probably checked out more than my total cost of tuition in terms of rental fees from like a pro like rental
that's
house.
Awesome.
And yeah. I'm like, I'm definitely yeah. getting my money's worth. And like we only have the highest level cameras we have are a Phantom 4K, like a Phantom Gold,
sweet.
Yeah, and a Red One, which is like a weird combination. But we've also got I think about 6 or 7 Sony FS7s on our order form right now. Through our film department head is what she told us like last week. She's like, we're working on that right now.
That's really cool. Have you touched the Phantom at all?
I haven't touched the Phantom. Not really. No.
You should do that.
It's. I'm actually getting cleared for a demo ahead of time, which is like, ooh,
that's really
cool. We've got 130 Chinese exchange students coming in to do a film workshop in the next couple months, and she's like, our film department head's like, so I need you guys to help us. There's about 500 students at the school, and not most of them are in the photo program,
mm-hmm.
and so there's about 30-ish people in our freshman film film department. You know, there's more people in the film department, but like, and we take up the most space. But like, she kind of like was like scooping people up because most people are out in gigs, and we're the mm-hmm. only people like kind of willing to like come into the school because like we're my roommate and I are really big on like helping out the school. Like, we designed a renter farm for the school that we're going to be implementing soon, hopefully. But it's just like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah,
it's like you kind of have to, you know. You get cleared for certain things and demos, and you get to check it out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's good that so when you say cleared, they like kind of walk you through the basics so you don't go out and like be like, we should throw dust on the lens and see what happens. I don't know why someone would do that, but you know, people are dumb.
Vaseline, just yeah.
You learn what
you clean it with water, right?
You learn what every button and menu on that thing does. Like,
yeah.
It is a. I mean, the Red demo is about 2 days long. Like, they teach you everything about those cameras. The just our camera support demo was a 4-hour class. Like, you know, learning how to lay dolly track and how to set up a crane, like a Cobra crane and stuff like that. Like,
that's cool.
It's just all, like, it's thorough. It's like, here's what you do. So when you get on set, you know, you use this thing as a special. Mm-hmm. You don't fuck up and break shit.
Yeah.
And also, if you break shit, it's on your dime. Like, unless they encourage you, like they have like a bunch of insurance places that give you a big discount, like $500 a year for $100,000 worth of insurance, including rental. Like, it's pretty decent insurance for a film student who's going to be checking out like a Red One and a bunch of grip gear and some cranes and some lights.
Sure. Yeah. Like,
well, I think that's really helpful. The production aspect of it, I think it's really helpful for even post departments to know.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you know just a little bit about camera and you know what an exposure is and you know what, you know, pulling focus is, you know, things like that, you can actually talk to the camera department and talk to the DP and not sound like a complete idiot.
Oh yeah. Like, you can yell at your first AC properly.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, you can tell when they're talking shit about you on the edit and not mute the track when you send it to the producers. That episode.
Yeah, that's true. That's tough.
You can tell.
I know that's happened a lot in film school. I think you learn real quick after that happens the first time.
When I was in school, the professor was like, the big joke that they'll play on you when you get to set is everybody's going to ask the new guy if he can go get some more elbow grease. And you're going to be like, what's elbow grease? I don't know. It's never happened to me.
Yesterday for me it was ballast fluid for the big jokers. He's like, go get some ballast fluid right now. It's like, okay. And I thought he said ballast hood, so I thought, oh, that probably exists. And then it wasn't.
Not a thing.
And then the key grip's like, I just punked you, man. I'm like,
oh, man.
And you're walking around. Can I get some of this fictional stuff?
They were all in eyes.
It's not even a film set. We're just here to punk you. What kind of movies do you like?
I'm a big fan of, like, sci-fi. My movie selection is really weird. I'll go from, like, Star Wars is, like, one of my big inspirations. This is, like, you know, some lonely kid on a desert planet who gets called out to take this great adventure. Like, and, like, see the galaxy and, like, fight off this evil empire. And then, like, love Hitchcock. Hitchcock, I love his visual style and the way he tells stories. Like, it's just, like, a huge, like, I don't know why. And then, oddly enough, I'll get into things like Starship Troopers is, like, a like one of my favorite movies. Like something about it, just like how campy it is, and like the fact that like 19-year-old Neil Patrick Harris is in it, and like all these like weird dudes are in it, and like, it's like what? It's just like it's I don't know. And I like I'll even go on a limb and say I liked the animated TV show and the sequels to it because of just that entire Starship Troopers universe. I think it's just kind of camp and lovely.
Hardcore.
Yeah. Are into sci-fi.
Have you seen The Martian?
I have not seen The Martian because Interstellar gave me a panic attack. Just like, oh my God, the Earth is dying. I'm fucked. Like,
Well, there's hope in The Martian.
There is hope.
There is hope.
Yeah. I recommend listening to Andy Weir's podcast before you watch the movie.
Yeah, we interviewed Andy Weir. Not a big deal.
Yeah, I think it's episode 43. I'm getting better at kind of, but I think it's in the 40s.
It is in the 40s.
Yeah.
Swaying 40s.
In the Bay Area as well.
Yeah, Mountain View.
Yeah.
That's where we went.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. It's a cool town.
Yeah. What about TV?
TV, Game of Thrones.
I was going to say, if you said, oh, I don't watch TV, I would have told you to get out.
No.
Wow, really?
My girlfriend and I like to binge watch shows like Parks and Rec, BoJack. Mm-hmm. BoJack Horseman hit really hard at home for me just because of like...
Because you're a horse or...
I'm actually... My hosts are somewhere at Mac. Yeah. I'm not sure where they are. That's my cousin, actually.
Oh, nice.
There's also Silicon Valley hits pretty hard home. That show is it's painfully accurate, actually. Like the part where even the first episode where he goes, oh, Miss Palo Alto 2K14, it's like some old lady on a bike. Like it's too accurate. Like there's too many of those kind of people up there. Like there's so many yuppies. It's just like ugh.
It's awesome.
I like a lot of HBO shows though, and a lot of Netflix. That HBO and Netflix money has been putting out some really good stuff lately.
Yeah,
in my opinion. Also, Generation Kill is a really one of my top favorite shows, just because I love like that really raw, realistic look on war.
Yeah, I love war.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No, I know.
I've known you 25 minutes. And no, you don't.
Yeah. No. No one should love war.
Gears of War.
That's a good game.
A little too gory for my taste.
War games?
Oh,
GTA.
Hey. I like GTA. So, do you have any advice for anybody that is trying to get into the film program at
Brooks Institute?
Brooks Institute. I was going to say Bradley for some reason.
Come on. Is that where you're speaking?
That's where I'm speaking in November.
Oh, okay.
Another plug. Jeez.
Yeah. Watch Scorpion, CBS, 9 p.m. Mondays.
Catch it.
Sponsor us.
Yeah. And do you have any advice to film students or people that want to go into film school?
Making the leap to get down here to begin with.
Do it. Go to a production hub. Don't go to like New Mexico Film School or like I got like Santa Fe like University trying to get me in on them a lot. Like go where there's a production hub and go somewhere that not where there's necessarily like a big program like USC and UCLA. They're only going to teach you theory. They're not going to get you on set as fast. Like I know that for a fact from a lot of people who work there. You're just gonna be like sitting there learning theory and like go somewhere where it has a good reputation. Brooks and Chapman, I say, are the pretty they're pretty underrated powerhouses that have been putting out a lot of really good students lately. And especially Chapman teaches a lot of technicality, not so much story, but they're still really amazing. I work with a lot of people from there. You know, I know a lot of people who are currently going there. And but the most important thing is go somewhere where you think you're gonna do well. Like, go visit the facilities, go take a tour, go talk with the staff, see how much one-on-one time you can get with the staff, because, you know, at my school, since there's only 500 students across, like, four or five different majors, not including our master's programs, you know, I can go into the film department offices and talk with the head of the film department at any time that I really want to, and, like, just sit there and talk with her, and, like, you know, talk about, oh, what movie should I see, what should I be learning right now, like... Do you have anything like you want me to work on for you, like you know, and like that you need doing? Like, just go and talk and like always offer to help people too when you get to a school because you like you know once you if you help out the faculty, they're gonna fall in love with you so incredibly quickly.
Oh
and
sure,
they will pull you onto their shoes if they're still working in the industry. Yeah. Is one thing I've definitely noticed. But in terms of applying, be you. Like, don't try to fake your. You know, don't try to like really pad your reel or like, you know, your awards. Just like, and like when you're writing your essays, if you're like going through like, you know, the College Board and stuff like that, like just be you. Like, don't try to like portray yourself as some like next Spielberg or, you know, J.J. Abrams or anything like that. Like, be a first-rate you.
Like, did you have to show them any kind of work of yours, or was it just an interview?
It was a on-the-phone interview, and it's kind of like they just want to see, like, do you have a drive? Do you have passion? Are you willing to learn? Because they understand that not everyone, you know, like, has a reel coming out of high school immediately.
Yeah, which is good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a big... It's like a big thing. It's just like, you know, also get on set as much as possible. Like, even if you have to go to Craigslist and work on like some yuppie, like, dude is never going to like get in, even into a festival, like go work on that set so you can say you've been on set and like learn your set etiquette, learn, you know, like assemble C stands on your shoulder, not on the ground. And yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
That's the thing. That was something I learned from a gaffer this weekend. I'm used to saying, like, just snapping them out on the ground, but these were all rocky mountain sea sands. Like, you want to throw them over your shoulder. Because, it's not really a technical thing. It's more of a looks thing. Because you look like an amateur if you're doing it on the ground.
So it doesn't actually. You look like
a dude who like, has no idea what you're doing. But if you do it on your shoulder, you're just like, it looks a little bit better.
Huh.
This is why I'm in a writer's room.
Exactly.
Also,
learn to spell.
Yeah,
that's about it.
Yeah. Well,
that's good.
Do you have a Twitter account or a Facebook account? You're a young chap. I'm sure you do.
I do have a Twitter.
Just made it sound so old.
I don't use it too crazy much. It's usually just like my musings. Like, oh, you know, you're on a film set when you have to wait for the director to call cut before you flush the toilet, like stuff like that. It's not really like anything important.
That's valuable.
Yeah, that's valuable.
I'm probably gonna start using Twitter more though. Instagram at V4Vitali, VITALE, VFORVITALE, like V for Vendetta, but
right.
Vitali.
Gotcha.
Because
that's a joke. It's also my email at gmail.com if you want to email me. And
it's out there now.
Send me those.
You're gonna blow up.
Send me those dank memes and you know.
What's your Twitter?
My Twitter is also at V for Vitali. It's just pretty much my unified like handle that I use a lot.
Oh, nice. Great.
And if you want to find me on Reddit, I'm not saying that one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all
that's a anonymity.
Conscientious objection right there.
Yeah. Right on. It's probably smart.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people, you should, I think you should probably do more of those things. Like,
new media is really powerful, I think, nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not very great at it, but, but the fact that you know, if you're in this film program and you can tweet out advice and stuff like that, I mean, that's kind of a powerful tool. You know, I don't know. It's kind of what we're trying to do. So.
And then you can look back one day on your journey.
Yeah.
And be like, ah, the days when I cared about them calling cut before I flushed. Now I'm like, this movie sucks.
Even though we were shooting MOS, like.
Yeah. That's the funniest part, like whispering, walking around on tiptoes.
Shh, we're shooting MOS.
There's not even a sound guy on set right now.
Yeah.
I was just like, I know we're not shooting sound, but I don't want to get yelled at if like I'm trying to direct here. Like,
right. You have that sometimes.
Playing it safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Even though I knew the guy, he was really cool.
Can you say anything about the movie that you were on with Jack McGee?
I'm not entirely sure.
All right.
So,
yeah, but it's
so look up Jack McGee on IMDb and go see all the stuff that says in production.
Yeah, we're in our third week right now. It was the script was a thesis project from a USC master's writing program, I believe.
Wow,
that's cool.
That's a wow.
So it's been through a lot of editing and revision and stuff like that.
That's exciting.
We had a guy in the thesis film at Montana State that I was at.
Yeah,
the lead actor of that movie. Had done a commercial for a local casino in Bozeman, Montana.
Oh, yeah?
So, pretty high-caliber stuff there.
It's a good story.
Thanks. I'm turning it into a miniseries.
I know.
That you're going to edit.
Oh, great.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Put on your reel.
Yeah.
That is your reel.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's best work.
Or your suicide note, whichever one.
Only you know that secret.
Maybe both.
I do. Yeah. And I'm not even going to be.
I'm going to write my will on that, actually.
I'm just going to. How?
Yeah.
It's like one frame in the show is just your will. Just scrolling really quickly.
You do it like a vanity card at the end of a Chuck Lorre episode.
Yeah.
Just here's all the stuff that I'm mad about this week.
Sign it like Abel Gance did with all his films.
Do you do any writing at all or any of that?
Yeah, I've got a couple things I'm writing. One I might submit to the 10-10-10 with Santa Barbara International, just because I feel like it's about working in a grocery store. And like, because I used to work in a grocery store up in the Bay Area, which tons of funny stuff happens there. It's like, if you want good comedy, like work in a grocery store for a couple months and it's just funny. Like, you get the weird, like all your, I guarantee you, all your coworkers are characters of some kind.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I've got a like my like kind of like big concept like thing that I want to do when I've got like it's like Generation Kill and Game of Thrones like smashed together and had a baby, like with like the big concept of Game of Thrones, but like the war aspects of Generation Kill and like a near future sci-fi setting is kind of like that's
something I would watch.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm just kind of cracking that out right now and getting my girlfriend to do concept art for me because
that's cool.
I can bribe her with coffee and bubble wrap.
There was bubble wrap at the bar mitzvah I was at last night.
Oh wow.
They brought out a giant roll of bubble wrap. It's not entertainment industry related. They brought out a giant roll of bubble wrap and threw it on the floor, and then they went on three and one, two, three, and all the kids jumped on the bubble wrap and screamed their brains out to a Katy Perry song. It was, I was like, I've never done acid, but I think this is what it's like.
Let's say you're sure we're at like some sort of like a cult meetup or something. And like, did you also see like satanic symbols like drawn on the wall?
Yeah,
you know, like just maybe like a Jesus, like I was gonna say dead on a cross, but he is anyway.
Yeah. I'm gonna put this out there right now. I'm gonna put this out in the open. I haven't even discussed this with you. You might find this interesting. They just cast a new character on Game of Thrones. Did you hear about this?
I think.
The Red something or Priestess. Red Priestess, is that a thing?
Fire Priest, yeah.
Okay. Priestess, and it's being played by a woman named Melanie something.
Okay.
Anyway, and she's shooting in Spain right now for Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I know her.
What? Really?
And I think we should try and get her on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Because that would be great. So when she comes back to LA,
you're gonna have to like boost your website by like its infrastructure by like 300 because you'll get the good old internet hug of death from all that Game of Thrones traffic.
That's true,
right,
man?
Oh, that was a nice voice crack too.
That's all right.
Yeah,
it's just time.
Anyway, I think that'd be. I'm just gonna put it out there in the universe now because I know I'm obligated to do something about it.
Yeah, you are. Nice job.
Cool, thanks, man.
Hey, how about I'm not gonna bring that up.
What? Bring it up.
No.
You can sign it to me. Do you not know sign language? I'll teach you really quick, and then you can sign it to me. Oh.
Does that work?
That means cactus, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, weird. Oh, we'll talk about it later. Fine. People can follow you on Twitter, can't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm over 500 followers now.
What?
I have like
50.
It was a big week, and I'm going to be live tweeting. This will already have come out. So yeah. I will have live tweeted our Halloween episode of Stitchers on ABC Family, which is about to become Freeform in January.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. So that'll boost my numbers even more, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I'm at The Real Zuber.
Yep. And
you're on there too.
I'm on there somewhat. JJ Geiger 7-Eleven, and Nadav is at.
You can do this. You can
is
do
it, the Very Nadav show?
Just Very Nadav.
Oh, okay, Very Nadav show.
And our podcast is on there.
Yep, early call time. We also have a phone number.
Yeah, that's 267-225 chat.
That's how Matthew actually got onto this couch today.
Indeed, yeah. This wonderful couch right here. Yeah. Call that number.
Yeah.
Yeah, 267-225-2428. And
leave us a voicemail or
You can text it.
Yeah, you can.
And if you do, Matthew's driving away today with a brand new washer and dryer. A trip to Fiji for five days and four nights.
Yep.
And a brand new Vespa.
Mm-hmm.
And a set of lawn darts.
So. I used to have lawn darts. No lie.
Really?
I was 6 years old throwing these lawn darts in the trailer park that I lived in. And then they got recalled. I'm like, I'm still fucking playing lawn darts. I don't care.
Of course they got recalled. They're darts.
Yeah, that you throw into the sky.
What was recalled on them?
Well, they're... They're lawn darts.
The concept.
Yeah. They're like, we need to buy those back.
Evolution called, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, do they recall handguns just because they shoot stuff?
We're not going to get into that debate.
No, I'm just saying, like, did they recall all lawn darts everywhere, or is there something specifically wrong with these particular?
I think it's because it's a safety issue.
But you can still buy lawn darts, can't you?
No.
Really?
No, you can't buy them.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
There's regular darts now that you throw on your lawn.
Yeah.
You could make lawn darts, right?
Well, you could. I mean, you could make spears, too, but no one does.
We should make throwing stars, and we should open an Etsy store and link it to the Early Call Time website.
Should make guns. Like,
yeah.
3D printed guns.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
I can get you guys a 3D printer.
Wait, really?
Sweet.
My old high school had one, yeah.
That's awesome.
Are you suggesting we, like, go up there and rob your old high school of its 3D printer? Because I'm in.
Wouldn't be difficult.
Okay.
Let's do it.
On that note, thank you for showing up today.
Yeah,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it was exciting. Hopefully the people at Brooks will send this to everybody that they know, and, you know, maybe we can teach some people some
stuff. If Brooks wants us to come and plug our podcast,
yeah,
and tell people about our experiences in the industry...
We could do that.
We're always looking for speakers. That is a thing.
Oh, dude,
we're always looking to speak.
Dude, we could do that.
We charge $10,000.
We could be like a sideshow act.
We could be. But you have to bring your Emmy. Yeah.
Here we are.
I know several of you have these, but
yeah.
What you do is you walk out, you set the Emmy on a little podium, and you put the mic up to its level, and then you just walk off. And then 40 minutes later, you walk back on, and you go, any questions?
You let it speak for yourself, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Oh, gosh.
That's the best speech ever.
I would pay so much money to actually see that happen, though. Just like,
that would be pretty funny.
I would be like laughing for the entire 40 minutes.
What's with the guy in the back who keeps laughing his head off? I'm not getting anything here.
I don't get it.
We bought a ticket to this thing.
Dude. That,
anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
Cool. Come see us at the Brooks... whatever.
Brooks Institute. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so contact us, you know, via Twitter, email at earlycalltime@gmail.com.
Yep.
The phone number, 267-225-CHAT, and we're doing this again, but...
You know, that's how advertising works.
Yeah. Well,
what was that number again?
267-225-CHAT.
267-225-CHAT?
That's right. 267-225-CHAT.
2428. 267-225-2428.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And without further ado, Matthew, what should we do?
Let's wrap it up, I guess, yeah?
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.